Okay, I think we're back. Hour number two. Mitchell, are you there?
I'm here. How are you doing,
Welcome.
Jeff?
I'm fine. I didn't hear anything for a moment there. Now I'm...
No, neither did I. I don't know what happened.
It's a moment of cosmic silence. All right. Just before World Wars 3, 4, 5, and 6 commence.
Right.
That about
it? Tonight I want to talk about the coming war with Russia and China, which would be World War 3.
Will that be a... Hold on. Will that be a bipolar war, or will it be a united front that the American communists are going to try to take on by themselves?
Well, it's a united front between Russia and China. They see the opportunity in attacking Taiwan and Ukraine at the same time, because it will make it so that there's really nothing anybody can do about it.
Okay. So Taiwan will be the trigger. You're looking at that.
Well, it could be either one. It could be Taiwan or it could be Ukraine. Which one will actually go off first, I'm not sure.
It kind of doesn't matter because the other
one
will follow.
One will follow
right
the other immediately.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Now, let me ask you this. You've got terrific connections. Is it true that the Russians, and some of the figures I've seen are way up there, 140 brigades on the border of North Ukraine or Northern Ukraine?
There's...
It's 140 something. It's not divisions.
Well, 140,000 troops, that makes up
That's what it was.
Divisions.
Just keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Right.
140,000 troops, 14 divisions. Okay.
14 divisions, which would be roughly four times that in brigades and then four times that in battalions. Okay. So anyways, we have to ask why this war is going to start. So what does Russia want? Russia wants guarantees from NATO that it will not admit Ukraine into the NATO alliance. Why do they want it? Because in 1989, the Iron Curtain came down with the express and unequivocal promise by NATO that they would not advance not one inch to the east. This was specifically and publicly stated, but not put into writing. Russia now has NATO members Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and Poland on its borders. If Ukraine was to join NATO, it would make NATO's border with Russia three times as large. This would be an existential threat to Russia. Russia strategically cannot ever allow it to happen. To Russia,
okay, hold on,
clearly...
Mitch.
Yes,
Mitchell, I'm sorry. Don't lose your place. This is really important for all of you to understand, and I know some of you do very well. You're students of military history and all that, but many don't. Russia is already... We can't use the word surrounded, but they're flanked by NATO countries and NATO members. If Ukraine is allowed into NATO, that will be an intolerable flanking on the south and west side of Russia. They cannot tolerate it. They will not tolerate it, and I don't blame them. So they will go in, probably to Ukraine, try to slice off the western two-thirds of it, and free up the Donbass in the east and make that a quasi-independent nation or a nation state or whatever you want to call it. But they can't tolerate this. It's too much. See, it's like if we were flanked by a hostile Mexico all along the southern border and then half of the Canadian border turned hostile and we were flanked on the north. We wouldn't. If we were intelligent as a nation, I'm not sure we are anymore, we wouldn't tolerate that. We'd say no. Too many enemies. Sorry. That's the situation with Russia in a crude nutshell. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so to Russia, NATO is clearly the aggressor. NATO became a military defense alliance in response to the Soviet Union. NATO became a military defense alliance without an enemy in 1992, when the USSR ceased to exist. So the Marxist Democrats made Russia the enemy by 2014. NATO attempted to make both Georgia and Ukraine NATO members. After NATO, without the United Nations approval, invaded Serbia and took Kosovo province from Serbia, which is illegal under the UN Charter. Russia invaded South Ossetia and Abkhazia in Georgia to make them independent states in response. This also made Georgia toxic as far as becoming a NATO ally, because they don't want to make somebody an ally that's engaged in war already.
Sure.
Okay. At the same time, in the Obama administration, organized and paid for the Orange Revolution with George Soros helping in the Ukraine, overthrowing a democratically elected president that wanted closer ties with Russia. The point person to make this happen was Victoria Nuland. Nuland is now Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. She was approved unanimously by the Senate for that position. Yes, your favorite Republican senators all voted without exception for the chief protagonist for war with Russia to her position at the Department of State. NATO's response to what Russia wants. Ukraine is free to join NATO, but it must meet conditions that will probably take up to 10 years to complete. Chairman Biden's response, any nation may apply to join NATO, and it's up to them. Third parties don't get a veto. What did Chairman Biden do in response to the so-called Russian provocations on the Ukraine border by massing troops? He confirmed to Putin that the USA would not send troops to help Ukraine, and that he was canceling a $200 million package of military assistance to Ukraine to cool things off. These people are talking past each other. They're not even recognizing what each other are saying. Okay? So Putin has issued an ultimatum, and we have responded with a no. And we have threatened to sanction Russia economically. Russia knows this is an empty threat because we have already been sanctioning Russia since 2014, and Russia has become a self-sufficient in all parts of its economy, while at the same time rebuilding and modernizing its military forces. Russia has plenty of fuel, minerals, and is a major food producer. So if we sanction Russia, Russia can sell the fuel necessary to China and India that are fuel-poor nations and that have good relations with Russia. They can sell their food exports also. Economically, Russia can do us far more harm than we can do to them. So there's, the sanctions are nonsense.
This is interesting. Russia has literally built underground safe facilities for virtually the entire city of Moscow. It's a ring around the whole city. Underground facilities. It's incredible. It's called civil defense. Can you point to our civil defense? What kind of civil defense do we have? How about zero?
Well, we have it for 0.05% of our population, while
zero.
Russia has it for 80% of its population.
There you go.
So only the big important people get to go to a shelter. The government we pay taxes to has made no effort for civil defense of us at all. They don't care about us. Okay. So we do have American troops in Ukraine right now. We started sending them in 2014 and trained the Ukrainians to our social justice warrior standards. I have some military acquaintances that showed me current film footage of how they train the Ukrainians to fight. It is lame and pathetic. What I saw them do very poorly was troop movements, specifically traveling, in which the likelihood of contact is not likely. They have poor control, bunched together lackadaisically, and have little air cover. This makes them vulnerable to attack. Traveling overwatch and movement to contact with enemy contact is possible when enemy contact is possible, which they just do not do. Finally, when the enemy contact is expected, they should move in what's called bounding overwatch, which they also do not practice. They have very poor individual combat survival skills. They do not practice good use of cover. And when they are behind cover, they shoot over it or highlight themselves to make themselves easy targets. Very poor and lackadaisical camouflage and concealment techniques. Their marksmanship training is just as pathetic as ours is. I was a technically and tactically proficient Army cavalry officer. What I saw in these videos was appalling. Please keep in mind that the Army that trained them, the U.S. Army, is the same Army that was defeated by illiterate, pedophile, bestial goat farmers with very poor command and control and training in Afghanistan. In the Afghanistan war, 5 times more American soldiers committed suicide than were killed by the enemy in action. To dispel any illusions, for every American soldier killed in action in Afghanistan, 22 Afghan civilians died. In contrast, for every Russian soldier killed in the Soviet-Afghan war, 15,000 Afghan civilians died. I make this point because the Russians are much more aggressive and have much looser rules of engagement than we do. It wasn't until 3 years after the Soviets pulled out of Afghanistan that the communist government fell. Communism was still actually in power when the communism failed in the Soviet Union. In contrast, U.S. troops had not even left Afghanistan before the government we installed fell to the Taliban. I should make it clear here that I am not belittling soldiers on the ground. They had their hands tied. I'm talking about a chronic lack of leadership. Those who were leaders have left over Marxist indoctrination or vaccine mandates. When Biden took over America, the first thing he did was purge the military of so-called white supremacists. The Russians and the Chinese have an excellent human intelligence program, so they know the status of our military. Very few Americans do. Also, we have no human intelligence assets in places like Russia, Iran, and China. So they can see us warts and all, but we really can't see them in detail. The military that brought failure to Afghanistan is the same military training supplying the Ukrainian armed forces. Can you imagine how encouraging that is to the Russians? Also consider this. Biden's approval rating is 34%. Kamala Harris's approval rating is 28%, and President Zelensky of Ukraine's approval rating is only 23%. It is Zelensky that insists on attacking Russians in the Donbass and taking Crimea back. Zelensky is practically a dictator.
Yeah.
Yet the Marxist Democrats in America love him. That love is not true love, but prostitution paid to Biden by the Ukraine. But it looks as if Biden is going to ghost Zelensky after all, okay? So Chairman Biden told Zelensky that NATO membership is off the table for Ukraine for at least a decade and that no one will come to his defense because he did not abide by the Minsk agreements made back in 2015. Zelensky says that he wants to control the regions in Ukraine now controlled by Russian militias. If you want to understand what this squabble is about, is who's going to get the blame for the Ukraine falling to Russia. It's going to land in Zelensky's hand. Biden's trying to wash his hands of it. Chairman Biden says it's not up to Russia or the USA if the Ukraine joins NATO. It's the Ukraine's decision alone. It's a very pig-headed. He's not even listening to what Putin's saying. That is not enough for Russia. What would you do? Solve the problem permanently by invading the Ukraine now while America and NATO are so weak, or complicate things by missing this moment of Western weakness and have a perpetual problem to deal with? Russia has even said that if there is a provocation from Ukraine, it will invade. Russia alone gets to define what that provocation will be. NATO and the U.S. have this past week ruled out military backing for Ukraine. So there is a possibility of this war being contained within Ukraine and avert a nuclear war. That is what academics expect, but they have tunnel vision. This war will go west. Serb troops massed at the border of Kosovo, which has American troops stationed there. While we know that Chairman Biden would not go to war over the American troops stationed in Ukraine getting killed, Kosovo has too many U.S. troops. If the U.S. attacks Serbia again, this time Russia has the U.S. outclassed and outgunned. This could trigger a Russian nuclear attack on the USA.
What about Georgia, Mitch? May I ask you, what about Georgia? How's Georgia fit in?
Georgia's keeping a low profile because they know Russia can just walk in and take them over.
You know what else is in Georgia?
Is Armenia, which is their Russian ally, you know?
Yeah. You know what's in Georgia that nobody knows about? You do. I don't know how many there are, but there are more than a few U.S. Intel-financed BSL 3 and 4 laboratories. It's a big, they got a lot of bioweapon laboratories there, American. And this is another issue in Georgia that nobody talks about. They built a number of them.
They want to put it in a place that's gone off the radar. Georgia just hasn't been in the news. Nobody thinks of it. It's the perfect place to put a biological lab.
Not since the necktie eater, no.
Yeah, right. So, Serbia is Russia's friend and ally, and this time Russia has the capability to actually protect Serbia. Consider that U.S. Senator Roger Wicker, Republican from Mississippi, suggested not just considering using conventional military force, but deploying our nuclear weapons to stop a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Wicker proposes that we should launch nuclear weapons against Russia and that we should use them first in a surprise attack. Wicker is the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Russia can hear this, and because they know that that Chairman Biden is a mere marionette of those who want to destroy America, so they view the possibility as credible. This may provoke a Russian nuclear attack on the USA when the Russians actually invade Ukraine. Okay, and I can't read their mind, but if you're in a fight, if you know somebody's going to throw a sucker punch at you, you would be wise to throw a sucker punch to them preemptively. Okay, so that is a danger. Our politicians are going to get us killed. The same Pentagon that thinks that the major threat to America is climate change and white supremacism also believes that it is possible to wage and win a, quote, limited nuclear war. This allegedly keeps a nuclear war small enough to make it viable and realistic policy option. These people are on drugs and they are delusional. The Russians don't think like we do. They fight to win. And this talk out of the Pentagon, when it is obvious that Russia has a bigger and more advanced nuclear arsenal than NATO does, makes the Russians believe that when dealing with the USA, they are dealing with a delusional and irrational actor. This requires a preemptive nuclear strike. Words have consequences. As the Russian news says, planners may be arrogant enough to believe they can conduct a controlled and restricted Armageddon. In reality, it makes more sense to assume that the chaos, disorientation, and sheer fury caused by any nuclear attack will escalate into a full-scale and all-consuming nuclear war. Senator Wicker's folly is merely one example of the moral and intellectual fallacy is spreading. It should be seen as a warning. Okay. Now, this is, I just quoted that from the Russian media.
Got it. Yeah.
So, in Bosnia and the Serb Republic part of Bosnia could ask to rejoin Serbia. Croatia would be inclined to support the Croatian part of Bosnia to absorb it. Bosnia is not a NATO member, but Croatia is. So how would this work? Croatia, a NATO nation, allied with Serbia against the Muslim Bosniaks, while Serbia fights NATO member, the USA, in Muslim Kosovo. I can see things really spiraling out of control. Only a university professor could believe the war could be limited to Ukrainian territory. Because the part that I read to you about the limited war, that comes from academia. Okay. One out of every five people in Ukraine are ethnic Russians. Kiev is just an hour drive from the Belarus border where Russian troops are massed. I predict that the Russians could take Kiev, the capital, on day one. I think the Russians could take all of Ukraine in a week. There would be some mopping up for several months after that. Looking at this war from a reasonable strategic point of view, the only way for Russia to assure that Ukraine never joins NATO is to just take it all and incorporate it into Russia. If Belarus was absorbed into Russia with their consent, which they would probably get, then Russia would have moved itself west to NATO's border. This would seal Putin's legacy in Russian history. It could possibly cause Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Slovakia, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Romania, Croatia, Slovenia, Montenegro, Northern Macedonia to abandon NATO and the European Union and escape from the Western Marxist woke tyranny. They have been there, and they have done that before. Last month, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba asked NATO to do all the military preparatory work now because the military scenario happens, if it happens, there will simply be no time. They know that. Once the Russians cross the border, they'll overrun the country quickly. The Ukrainians know it will be a short war. NATO has no intention of preparing for anything. Chief of Ukrainian military intelligence, Brigadier General Kirilo Budanov, estimates that Russia is prepared to attack Ukraine by the end of January or beginning of February. Russia will attack from the west in Transnistria, the south from Crimea, the east from Russia proper, and the north from Belarus, each corresponding with the Ukrainian military region. Russia can mass troops for attack on many fronts, but that forces Ukrainian troops to divide their already paltry forces. In other words, Russia actually has Ukraine surrounded. That's something that most people aren't aware of. Okay. So, but I think it'll be the first week of January when the Ukrainians are on Christmas holiday routine, January 1st through the 8th. Going in on the ice both supports the Russian heavy equipment and keeps the Ukrainian population indoors, as well as keeping Ukrainian soldiers seeking shelter. This gives the Russians speed. In what may become a routine practice elsewhere, Ukrainian Lieutenant General Valeriy Zaluzhny said that anti-vaxxers are assisting the Russian invaders by preparing the ground for large-scale invasion of the Ukraine by Russian troops. They must be dealt with. It may be Russia's holy duty to liberate Ukrainians from the woke tyranny of the current Ukrainian government, especially if these anti-vaxxers are ethnically Russian.
Okay, hold on, Mitch, right there. Hold on one second. Okay. We've got to take a break. We'll come right back. Excellent analysis, okay, as always, from Mitchell Henderson. Back in a minute. Okay, let's get right back to Mitchell Henderson. Excellent overview of the potential war between Russia, Ukraine, and half a dozen other countries there, not to mention Europe and NATO. And we'll see about Chairman Biden. All right, Mitch, you got a lot more on the table, so let's get going.
Okay, so the Chinese invasion of Taiwan. The best strategy for both China and Russia is to coordinate their invasions. NATO and the U.S. are unprepared for two major wars on both sides of the world. The Russians and the Chinese will win this war. our military knows and has been open about losing war with China over Taiwan. Since the horrific defeat by the Vietnamese in the 1979 border war, China resolved to change its military to win.
Okay. Get a little closer to your phone there, Mitch. Just a little.
Consider this. Between 1954 and 1975, the Americans lost 58,000 troops fighting the Vietnamese communists. That is 58,000 American troops over 21 years. In the 1979 invasion of Vietnam by China, the Chinese lost 300,000 killed in just 1 month of fighting. This was a wake-up call. The PLA decided to tailor their military to the mission. Since the mission number one has always been to take Taiwan, when they have razor-focused on that, they did not need a huge navy because they did not intend to project power anywhere in the world, but just in the South China and East China Seas. The United States developed a doctrine for China called air-sea battle so that the People's Liberation Navy and People's Liberation Army Air Force concentrated on what they call A2AD, or anti-access area denial. This focused on submarines to stop the very long logistical lines across the Pacific. Long external lines of communication, meaning supply, are very vulnerable. China already has very good and non-vulnerable interior lines of communication. All they have to do is keep our Navy and Air Force out. For our awesome carrier fleet groups, they intend to send 10 anti-ship missiles for every one that has that we have the ability to shoot down.
Hold on. 10 yes. to 1. That's what they're prepping for.
10 to 1.
10 right. to 1. So our ships have Aegis missiles. Those are anti-missile missiles, supposedly. And if they work, right. Okay. So the Chinese are prepped to fire 10 anti-ship missiles against every one of our ships that has the ability to shoot down one.
It's even more than that. For example, an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer and its Aegis defense system can independently target and shoot down 29 independent missiles. The Chinese intend to swarm it with 290 anti-ship missiles.
10 to 1.
Okay.
Wow.
They're going to swarm our fleets. The October 2021 issue of Air Force Magazine's cover states, "Out of time, China's threat is now. Air and space dominance is up for grabs." Inside it states, "Air Force leaders warn U.S. will lose air superiority without rapid change." Yes, China has read this article. China knows it has a short window of opportunity in order to make this take Taiwan back, you reunify is what they call it. China's Xinhua news agency said that on the 19th of December, quote, "Beijing will not hesitate to strike U.S. forces should they try to prevent China's reunification with Taiwan. The U.S. simply cannot build a deterrent to prevent the Chinese mainland from carrying out reunification by force when necessary, and the U.S. cannot afford to defend Taiwan at the cost of a deadly war," unquote. I'm sure that they said this when they read what our military admitted to. The article goes on to say, reunification by force will definitely happen. Okay. So, Russia and China are not signaling us that they're going to attack. They're telling us outright and forthrightly they're going to attack.
Got it. Yeah.
So an intelligence source that specializes on China says that, unlike us, China remembers yesterday and looks for patterns and cycles in history. Unlike us, they learn from the past. They remember Admiral Yamamoto of Japan warned against war with the United States and Britain because they thought them as weak and incompetent. However, Japan was not at the time one of the world's two biggest economies. And in fact, based on spending power parity, China is already the biggest economy on Earth. Japan became number two in the 1980s, but lost its place to China. China hates Japan, and it is their dream to win against the Americans while the Japanese lost. China's intelligence is outstanding. They have soldiers, sailors, and airmen in our military. They have spies within our defense industry and Chinese agents even in control of some of our high government officers. Our spy network in China was all arrested and executed when they hacked Hillary Clinton's unsecured iPhone in 2016. Now they know beyond a doubt that the U.S. and NATO forces are weak and incompetent for real, not just suspected. China also knows from real history that China and Russia won World War II. Russia lost over 30 million people fighting the Germans, and China lost over 20 million people fighting the Japanese. The USA lost only a total of 400,000 in both theaters of war. No Chinese has ever learned that we were a contributor to the defeat of the Japanese. They don't teach that our role in defeating Japan. Our role was peripheral and secondary. Our consistent failures at war without Russian and Chinese help is evident in Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Why should they fear us? So why can't Russia and China take on the USA and destroy our power now while they have the opportunity? They see no reason why they shouldn't, okay? A little published Chinese assessment of the U.S. military uses racial and moral factors to explain why we are weak and incompetent. Okay, now I was able to get a hold of this assessment, okay? First is racial. They consider white people to be human but uncouth barbarians. They do not consider black people to be human. They believe that women are too weak to fight men and that morally decadent LGBT people are harbingers of failure in war because that's their history, okay? That's what happened to them. They note that ever since President Truman integrated black people into our combat arms units after World War II, we have lost every major war we have fought. As Obama allowed LGBT and women to serve openly in combat arms units, our training standards have been abysmal. The Chinese wonder how a military full of people who have been given trigger warnings and get upset over microaggressions could possibly endure the extreme hardships of a war against a major superpower like China or Russia. They follow the nonsense of wokeism among our senior military leadership, and they lose their fear. They look at Lloyd Austin's stand down of the military at the beginning of the Biden regime to purge our forces of white supremacists as definitely weakening our military and hollowing out our forces. They look at us kicking out some of our finest soldiers because they refused to get a vaccine as pure idiocy verging on suicide. Now, let me clarify, this assessment that I just finished is a Chinese assessment. Okay. That is not
interesting. Got it.
My assessment or our assessment, that is the Chinese assessment. The Marxist Biden regime has made war in Taiwan and Ukraine inevitable and soon. They fear that if we have an actually free and fair election in November 2022, could turn Congress Republican, they will have their best window of opportunity in a century to resolve these problems close if that election happens. Many Americans may not know this, but Congress can declare war and override a presidential veto. It has happened before. In 1898, Republican President McKinley did not want to go to war with Spain, but the Democratic Congress passed a veto-proof declaration of war. It could happen again, okay, in 2022. Okay, it's not likely to happen now. Several years ago, they asked Russians what they thought Americans should learn. The unanimous reply was history, and the Chinese feel the same, okay? Even our leaders do not know history, and the enemy can tell that they don't know, okay? So these are assessments you know, the assessments that I see that the Russians are making about the Ukrainians and the Chinese are making about the Americans, okay, they're realistic assessments. You know, I had the, you know, it's like when I went in the Army in 1971, yes, we were fighting in Vietnam, but what they taught us, the way they taught us, they did teach us combat survival skills. They really taught us those good. And our rules of engagement were simple. Our job was to kill people and break things. That's it. Very uncomplicated. We are so, our military is so far away from that now that we in 1993 even quit teaching the principles of war because, well, they're just too harsh. It's like several principles
too
are
harsh.
To gain the initiative. Gain the initiative, that means you got to act first. And then maintain the initiative, in other words, keep the enemy off balance the whole time to victory. The purpose of war is to destroy the enemy. There's no purpose of war less than doing that. Okay? That's how Russia and China looks at it. The military is, its job is to destroy the enemy forces. Pure and simple. That is not the American, Americans don't look at war that way anymore. We have all these, high academic, like objectives that were going to be social objectives and stuff, like we did in Afghanistan, you know. And it did, in the long run, it did nobody any good. Okay. So, there's other principles of war, like massing forces, and violence of action. Okay. What those things do, Jeff, is, they keep your soldiers from dying, okay? The more aggressive you are towards the enemy, the faster you hit them, the less of your troops get killed. Okay?
Understood. Yep.
So it sounds, to the woke mindset, it just sounds evil and violent. Well, you know, it's absurd because war is the ultimate of violence, you know? And one reason why nobody has any faith in us is because we won't fight a war like that. It's like when we went to Iraq and Afghanistan, the number one thing that our commanders were worried about was force protection. They wanted to reduce casualties as much as possible. But then they didn't do the right things. It's like going from one FOB to another FOB. We always left down the same road and returned down the same road. In real war, you would never do that because the enemy, it makes you predictable to the enemy. You always go one way and return a different way, okay, to make it, and that's how you protect your troops, okay? But we're not that way, okay? And our leadership is worried about their careers. They're not worried about taking care of the men under them. And the men under them understand that. They know, when they say it came up with that army of one, it meant that basically the soldier was on their own, that nobody up the ranks was going to protect them or take care of them. Okay. My sons called it a do-it-yourself army because nobody else is going to do a thing for you. Okay. And then we wonder why the suicide rate is so high. You know, it's like NCOs and officers that I had current soldiers tell me they're like cops. They're just there to make your life miserable and write you up for things and make you look bad. And that's bad for morale. You know, who wants that? Another country that's looking at all this is India. Remember, I was talking about India like a year ago, and India was like with Japan and Australia and the United States and the Quad to hold back China. Okay, well, India decided that we were totally unreliable, and they decided, you know what, we're going to go back to being friends with Russia again. So now they buy their military equipment and get their military training from Russia, not from the United States, because see, Russia's reliable. No matter what India does, Russia will still sell them the guns and the bullets. Okay, whereas the United States, any day, they can decide, oh, we're not going to send anything else to you. it's over. We have a very bad habit of stabbing our friends in the back. And everybody knows it. India knows it. Okay?
Exactly.
So what would you do if you was India? I mean, you would go with the strong horse, you know, the one likely to win.
Of course.
The one
course.
Who's going to be reliable.
Yeah. Oh,
you know?
Of course. Yeah.
Let me
pull back just a tiny bit.
Okay.
What is your visualized time frame as we move into winter of the two wars, Ukraine and we'll just call it Taiwan for the heck of it, going off this winter, or will they wait until spring?
Well, you see, spring is a rough time, especially in Ukraine, because the soil's too soft. Whereas if you go in the Ukraine in the dead of winter, they call it going in on the ice, okay, because the ice will support your heavy equipment, okay, whereas the mud gets you bogged down. They want this to be a very quick attack. The benefit of going in the winter over the summer is in the summer everybody's outside and everybody's farming and everybody's doing outdoor activities. Whereas in the dead of winter, everybody's staying warm in their house. So it's like by going in the winter, the Russians already have everybody under house arrest. Okay, if you want to look at it that way.
Okay.
And they know where the people are. They're in their houses. Okay. So, and any kind of like militia or guerrilla activity would be very hard to do in the dead of winter in Ukraine. So in the summertime, people are more likely to get out there and get in the mud and get in the fight. In the wintertime, well, there's less incentive to do that. It's a harder thing to do, okay? So I think both of these wars could be over within a few weeks, okay? This whole war could be
so,
be
all right,
done
and
in a matter
we have
of
just,
weeks.
We have 5 minutes left. The outcome of the war, the wreckage of the American military will be strewn on both sides of the planet if we get involved to any significant degree in Europe. Europe will be toast. It'll have to be a nuclear war. I don't see any other way. It's going to escalate. There'll be tactical nukes, and they may escalate into larger tactical nukes, but I think nukes are on the table. What's going to be left? What's the aftermath? What's your projection?
Well, the
What's your
aftermath
guess?
Is... The aftermath is, let me give the thing of West and East Germany. So East Germany was a mess when West Germany absorbed it. But you know what? Everybody said, oh, this would be a disaster. But they managed to do it okay. All right. So, most of the damage in Russia will be in the Ukraine and leave those people dependent on Russia as long as possible is beneficial for Russia. So they don't have to rebuild that. They can rebuild the Donbass, the industrial area. They can get that up and running pretty fast, okay, which is important to them. Russia already grows enough agricultural stuff, but Ukraine is a breadbasket too. So by summertime, they can have them up and farming and stuff. Taiwan is a different story. It depends on when they surrender. Basically, if they surrender quickly, there'll be less damage, and there'll be less damage to the mainland, too. And it depends on if it goes nuclear, the main country, you got to remember that Russia is twice the size of the United States with half the population of the United States. So the United States will sustain more damage in a nuclear war than Russia will. Not only that, but we have a policy of not blowing up their main cities, where they have a policy of specifically blowing up our big cities, okay? So we can expect some sort of Middle Ages thing here in the United States after this war. Economic collapse, social collapse.
So East and West will stand back and watch the U.S. rot in its own swill.
Exactly. Europe is going to try to avoid this nuclear war part. They see the downside of it, and they would rather just stay out. Okay, they even told Russia that they're not in. were not involved in it. Okay, but like I said, in Serbia and all these other places, things can really spiral out of control. You know, Turkey has said that it's going to send troops to Ukraine. If Russia responds by attacking Turkey, that means NATO has to get involved. Okay, so anything can trigger a nuclear war. There's many places where nuclear war can begin. It could begin at the very beginning, or it could begin, you know, further down the road when things spiral out of control.
All right. Okay? So, but you see this as a non-global thermonuclear barbecue. It'll be less than
no, that. It's not going to be global. And furthermore, you know, there's some other factors involved here. So the goal of our government is to destroy our country. Okay.
It's not our government, Russia, of course. It's not.
We'll be more than happy to oblige.
Yeah.
I mean, we've hit this wall on the vaccination thing, so that the only way to take America down may be to encourage Russia to nuke us. Okay. And do not think for a minute that all these players are independent. They will coordinate this to happen, okay? They're working together to make this happen. So they will oblige us. Our government hates us, okay? It despises the American people. You know, they really don't have anything in mind to help us, okay? So so we'll be on our own, and I don't think that the American public will have to contend with the American government after this war. I think you'll be contending with bandits and criminal gangs. And keep in mind that criminal gangs are already organizing and already working.
Oh, you bet.
Doing banditry and looting
and
stuff
planning.
Like that.
Okay? Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Well, that was a fascinating dissertation on a very, very real potential of what the immediate geopolitical military future holds for us. And it's not good news. Not good news. Do you see, I got one more question. Any attack on the U.S. mainland by Russia and or China?
Well, I see an attack on the U.S. mainland, a nuclear attack, just a nuclear attack. Now, China actually does have this notion to take some of the Aleutian Islands so they can be an Arctic territory.
Got it.
Okay, but Russia at the same time, Russia actually opposes that.
They wouldn't like that.
Think of it this way. The Aleutian Islands used to belong to Russia. They're not about to give them to China. Okay. So there could be, I think Russia's just going to tell China, look, we're going to coordinate, we're going to make this happen, we're going to win, but you're not going to take the Aleutian Islands. Russia did that, like in Syria, he told Assad, you can't attack Israel if we're helping you. Because they didn't want Israel attacking Russian troops. Okay. So Russia has a lot of sway. When they come in and they want to take control, they do not mess around. They do what must be done, okay?
They do. The Russian army says something interesting. We got to go here, but they say the Americans think they know how to fight, but Russians know how to die fighting.
Right.
It's very, very powerful statement, the way it was originally iterated. And in other words, they don't play games. They don't play games. They don't have fags. They don't have fags in the military. They don't have trannies in their military. They fight and they die. They're soldiers.
They fight to win.
That's right.
They roll over you. Okay.
Yep.
They're merciless.
Look what they did in World War II to Germany. The reason World War II was lost to Germany was because of the human waves that the Soviets threw against them. The Germans couldn't kill them fast enough. And that's a true statement.
And you also have to remember that in World War II, the Russians were not signatories to the Geneva Conventions.
No.
So there was no such thing as a war crime. There was just war. But trust me, nothing's changed. Russia's the same way. They're not concerned with war crimes. They're concerned with conducting the war. The objective is to destroy the enemy. However you get that done, they'll live with it. Okay? It's like it's easier to get forgiveness than permission. So they'll just do what they have to do.
Yeah, very good. Mitchell, thank you for that. That was quite extraordinary. We will see what happens soon enough.
Okay.
All right.
Soon enough.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night. Mitch Henderson. A very interesting analysis. Very pragmatic. We'll be right back.